You're listening to the DeCesare Group Podcast. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare. Today, we're highlighting Life Skills Industries, a vital organization that's been South Central Kentucky's premier provider of mental health, substance abuse, and developmental disability services for over 40 years, serving more than 12,000 people each year across 18 counties and employing over 800 professionals. Life Skills Industries also offers a wide array of vocational services for individuals with disabilities designed to help people assess and develop job skills, find meaningful employment, and maintain long-term workplace success. Joining me today to talk more about Life Skills and a new comprehensive initiative to combat the opioid epidemic are Joe Dan Beavers, President and CEO, and Whitney Westerfield, Director of Legal and Governmental Affairs. Here's my conversation with Joe Dan Beavers and Whitney Westerfield. Joe Dan, Whitney, welcome to the DeCesare Group Podcast.
Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us.
Well, Joe Dan, I know you, you're a long-time listener and first-time caller, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And we're going to break Whitney. Whitney's a former colleague of mine in the General Assembly.
That's right.
Former state senator from Hopkinsville. Represented Christian, Logan, and Todd counties for most of your tenure.
Right.
And then Joe Dan and I have known each other for a long time as well. Of course, a leader at Life Skills. And wanted to get you all in here, and let's just get started. Let's talk about this Anchor project. It's very exciting. It's described as a comprehensive approach to addressing the opioid crisis and mental health challenges in the Brad region. Can you all share the perspectives on what makes this project unique and innovative compared to other initiatives and how it leverages the strengths of Life Skills and the broader community?
Sure, I'd be happy to start. This, from a clinical perspective, brings together components of our care delivery system that historically have been very separated and siloed. And one thing we're really proud of is this will be the first of its kind in the Commonwealth. So these components have existed separately in other places, but we're going to have them all coordinated under one roof with our city, county, and federal partners, and then other community service providers. So it'll offer really a one-stop shop, a no-wrong-door approach to folks in a mental health crisis or struggling with substance use disorders.
So, Whitney, and you might be better able to answer this. In the past, you know, let's say if law enforcement picked up someone that was having a mental health issue, what would happen before this center would come around?
Well, that officer is going to be tied up for a while.
Yeah.
They're going to spend a lot of time booking that individual into the local county jail, waiting and getting through all that booking process, which takes some time. And then from a clinical perspective, it's just about the worst thing you can do for that individual. They're going to sit in a cell, might be in there with 100 other people or 20 other people or with nobody else. They're not getting access to the care they need, despite the fact they're in the middle of a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. Even if the officer knows that, there's nowhere else you can take them. The alternative might have been the emergency room.
Yeah.
For those that are in a crisis medical situation and need to be healed from that, or that needs to be addressed in some way, but then the hospital doesn't have a place to do that. They're not set up and they're not geared or built to hold somebody that's got behavioral health issues that persist beyond that crisis acute medical care that needs to be given. And so they end up sitting, and that costs taxpayers a lot of money. It costs that individual a lot of recovery time. It costs officers time and money and resources. They're not back out on the street doing what they need to be doing and going after the next call for service, because those don't slow down and stop. It ends up being a bigger problem for every part of the system. This is an incredible approach, and other states are doing it. We're not the first state to try to do it. We looked at the Mental Health Co-op, which is a sister agency of Life Skills down in Nashville in Davidson County. They've got a crisis treatment center that this is modeled after. Other states have done the same sort of thing. This response to the mental health crisis in a way that's more individualized and focused to the needs of that specific individual, instead of just dropping them off at the jail and letting them sit for what could be days or weeks.
How does this streamline the process for that individual? It kind of walk us through what happens.
Sure. So maybe a simple example. I'll use myself as an example. Let's
sure.
say I've been battling mental illness most of my life and maybe self-medicating with drugs or alcohol, and I'm in the throes of a crisis. And you're driving by, you see me on the side of Scottsville Road, and I'm maybe yelling at cars and in the middle of a breakdown. And you see that, know it's potentially dangerous for me or others. You want to do something about it. So you pick up your phone, you call 911. It's like, hey, we've got a guy, you know, next to the road here. It's dangerous. He needs some help. They're going to send a law enforcement out to check on me, do a welfare check in that situation. that we, and we are very fortunate in Warren County and some of our surrounding counties that almost all of our law enforcement officers have the opportunity to go through crisis intervention training, which is specific mental health training for law enforcement and first responders that the community mental health centers help conduct. So it gives them a special set of skills to deal with that situation without escalating it. And but they'll try to get me help. Ideally, they're going to bring me today to the crisis unit that we operate here in Bowling Green. They're going to have to wait with me while an assessment's done. Lots of process to go through there. Could take several hours. This situation, if that comes about, they'll have a single place they can bring me to. And then once a secure handoff is made from law enforcement to the clinical team, the law enforcement folks can leave and go about their patrol and their duties and leave me with in the hands of trained professionals in crisis response to help triage that situation. And then the rest of the care continuum from that acute crisis and addressing that immediate concern down the levels to more safer and secure treatment will be available in the same space. So as an individual, I don't have to go anywhere else. I can go right through that process in one space. And then the law enforcement officers, or maybe it's EMS, ambulance, right, sheriff's department, whoever may be involved, they can basically drop me off and go about the rest of their day and not have to sit and wait and go through that process with me.
We're talking about cutting down at something that could take hours to something that should take about 10 or 15 minutes.
Yes, yeah, sir.
And you know, time is money at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, public resources.
Again, those calls for service aren't stopping. Yeah. And if they're spending time at the jail or at the hospital babysitting somebody that a clinical person needs to be taken care of, or that you've got to go through all the booking steps to do, they're not out there answering that call.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, you know, Joe Dam, with your experience in healthcare administration and community mental health, and Whitney, your background in law and government, what are some of the key challenges you anticipate in implementing the Anchor Project, and how are you working together to overcome these obstacles with internally and externally?
I don't mind to start there. From a clinical perspective, it's really twofold. One of them specific to our industry, the other maybe more broadly to the economy as a whole. We're excited about this project. The way we have it staff scheduled now, it's going to 88 FTEs in this building. So that's there's some new job creation we're going to have with this, and we're excited about that. But we got to find those folks. And it's a tough job market right now. The healthcare industry overall, the last 5-6 years, we've kind of been through the ringer,
yeah,
particularly in this geography. If you think about the stress of COVID-19, the tornadoes that came through in 2021, it's been a challenging field to be in every aspect of healthcare. So we're going to need to recruit some great folks to come work in this program. I'm excited about the opportunity, though, because we are doing things differently here. This will be, if you're out there listening and you want to make an impact in behavioral health, we're going to give you that opportunity right here in your community to do that. But we're partnering with WKU, with the Chamber, with some other areas, other area partners to help us grow and develop that workforce. So from a blocking and tackling standpoint, maybe the basics, that's a big challenge, right? Just finding those folks to fill these roles.
Yeah. How many roles will need to be filled?
Again, right now we're estimating the building will have 88 full-time equivalents, probably 100 people, though, because some of those jobs will be part-time.
Right.
Some of them will be transferring from positions we have that exist, and like part of these components do exist in other places in our community.
Yeah.
But we're growing them and expanding them and then consolidating it into one space. So we'll still need probably upwards of 50 people that we'll need to hire to staff this program once it's fully up and operational.
All right, fantastic.
I think the biggest obstacles moving forward aren't in the implementation. I know that's what you asked about. We've got fantastic community partners, and Joe Dan just rattled those off, from the Chamber to the Brad, Eric Sexton and his team, and folks at Life Skills combined. There's a lot of hands putting together the Anchor Project and making it work. I want to also thank the legislature. Last year, and I was proud to be one of those voters last year in the 2024 budget session, when we appropriated $20 million to build it. The biggest hurdle going forward is making sure we have adequate resources. One of the biggest hurdles is making sure we have adequate resources to keep it going and to scale it up, because yeah, the need is there. The population of people that fall into this category, there are lots of folks that law enforcement respond to a call for service, and they need to go to the county jail.
Yeah.
And that's true everywhere, not just in Kentucky, but around the country. But, man, there's a whole lot of people that law enforcement respond to, and there's a clear behavioral health crisis that needs to be intervened and addressed. And the county jail is not the right place.
Right.
I suspect we're going to have this place at capacity, and I want other communities to try to do it. So my hope, and it's not as an obstacle as much as it is an objective, I hope that other communities do this and copy this work. We've looked at what other states have done and other organizations have done. We've looked at your former colleague up in Northern Kentucky, who I'm drawing a blank on now off the top of my head. Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
In a house?
Yeah, you can edit this out.
Not Adam Koenig, is it?
No. Edgington.
She's not there.
Alicia Webb Edgington.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
But she was there. Yeah. Your all service overlapped, yeah. I thought, for a time.
Yeah, we were in the house together. Yeah.
Well, her life center.
And she's an Edmonton County person.
That's
right.
She really?
Yeah, that's right.
I did not know that. Yeah. Well, small world.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
Webb.
That's right. That's right.
Alicia up there in Northern Kentucky has her Life Learning Center, and we're using some of that model here, too. We want other communities to do this. I'd love to see Hopkinsville do this and have Life Skills western half of its region adopt the same approach, perhaps on a smaller scale. But the objective, I think, going forward is to continue to show people the value of the impact it can make.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, you know, this project involves a three-phase approach, including Mental Health Crisis Intake Center, the Life Learning Center, and the Office of Drug Control Policy. How do you ensure seamless coordination and integration between these three phases to provide a holistic continuum of care for individuals in crisis?
Well, it's a great question, Jim, and that's really part of the secret sauce in all this. So the three phases, the first one was establishing the Office of Drug Control Policy, that regional branch here. That is something that we're mirroring from our friends in Northern Kentucky that mm-hmm. they utilize to effectively battle the opioid epidemic there. And that's already in place for us. Brooke Edwards is housed with the Barron River Area Development District, and she's our director for this regional Office of Drug Control Policy. And they're going to act as the quarterback for all of this, helping bring together, coordinate, and facilitate amongst really city, county, state, and federal partners in this process. And so far, that's been unbelievable. I was able to share this with some of our elected leaders, and I'll say it every time I get the chance. It's been amazing to see how everyone's come together around this. It really hasn't been much of a sell to make to any of the stakeholders. When we outlined the opportunity that we have here, everyone, Democrats, Republicans, the House, the Senate, city, state, county, UK fans, U of L fans, they all came together around this.
UK fans.
That's we generally collaborate with one another. It's those others that maybe cause the infighting sometimes.
No offense taken, you guys.
But everyone rallied around this. It was easy to see the direction, and they all had a different problem they were trying to solve and saw a way that this helped remedy some of those solutions, whether that was our local judges with some of the challenges that they see, our law enforcement officers, our county jails, our hospital systems. MedCenter Health has been a big partner with us working through the logistics of this and how to work it. It's going to help them alleviate stress and pressure in their emergency rooms.
Yep.
So it's it really does touch our state psychiatric hospitals. We know this will help deter inpatient hospital admissions there, which is an added expense to us as taxpayers. So it was easy to kind of build that initial groundswell around it, but Brooke and her role in that regional office is going to help basically keep us on track and as it moves from maybe concept to operations. So that's how we'll at least kind of have our structure around it there. But really the beauty of it, like Whitney said earlier, each of these components exist somewhere in the world today. Other states are doing this. We think, though, at least what we know today, this is the only place in the nation we'll have all of them together.
Okay.
So there is other models like the Crisis Intake Center that we're basing this off of. He mentioned the Life Learning Center in Northern Kentucky, and they've had tremendous success in their aftercare and getting folks connected to work, employment, housing, that all those things we know that help keep you in recovery.
Right.
And had amazing success there. And our idea is to really marry those three things. We'll have a regional stakeholder group that will help guide this work together. We'll help with the crisis intake point, that first point of entry into the system. And then after they have a chance to have the crisis stabilized, some basic short-term treatment to keep them stable, we're going to have a warm handoff to a Life Learning Center program nearby. That's right. That'll help provide them with job training, education, assistance with housing, really a non-medical wraparound services that we know help keep you in a good place. And so the track records of each of these programs across the nation have been remarkable. So we're real excited to see what we can do when we bring it all together.
And that's awesome that, you know, the people that are having troubles, that you not only get them the help they need mentally and physically, but also get them back into the workforce where they're productive citizens.
You should have Alicia on and have her talk about the Life Learning Center and what they're doing and how that component fits in here.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of operations under one roof. They don't have the behavioral health component on the front end, that sort of triage and intake and addressing that acute crisis that someone's in. But all of the vocational training, something as simple and that we take for granted, getting a new ID issued to you or a driver's license, making sure you've got the right connections or resources to the public benefits that you might be entitled to receive. They have people under that one roof there in Northern Kentucky in their facility, and you can do all that while you're there. That having that component in addition to the behavioral health, that acute crisis intervention, that's a huge deal and does not exist. So I'm just as excited as Joe Dan to see it get built and start being utilized, because we know that population exists because we're seeing them now in our county jails and in our emergency rooms.
Yeah.
And I'll add, we're actually partnering with WKU and the College of Health and Human Services, Dr. Austin Griffiths and Dean Tanya Basta, to do a long-term academic study on this work too. So it won't just be us coming back hoping a year or two telling you how good we're doing. We're going to have some social work professors studying this. We hope an opportunity for them to produce, you know, academic papers and research around the efficacy of this work that we're doing. So we're going to have a third party watching over us and making sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. And then, like I said, we hope build a blueprint others can follow.
That's awesome. So, you know, some of the specific goals are to, A, reduce opioid-related deaths, keep people from unnecessary incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
I have a judge friend of mine, Steve Wilson.
He
says, you don't put people in jail you're mad at.
That's right.
You know, you get them help, and improving access to mental health services. So how are you going to measure success of the project in achieving these goals? And are there certain pieces of data you're going to be tracking to assess its impact on the community?
Yes, sir. So we put together a proof of concept, a white paper that we shared with our legislators, as Whitney referred to earlier, to help secure the funding for the project. And that's where we're going to start. But again, our partnership with WKU, we're going to look at maybe some additional measures to add to this. But some of the basic ones, just from a dollars and cents impact, we know this will reduce admissions to our state psychiatric hospitals. It will reduce the census in jails, particularly our Warren County Regional Jail. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the immediate impact is going to be the time and energy and effort expended by our local law enforcement agency. So we have a really good relationship with all of those partners in the community, but a majority of that work, just based on the census and population, is either the Warren County Sheriff's Office or Bowling Green Police Department. So we work really closely, Chief Delaney and Sheriff Hightower and their team, and we track data on a monthly basis with them today of how many calls they make, how long it takes, what the average length of time is, and then we can look at what that costs them, how much money they're spending in manpower, and then if anything adverse happens, you have damage to vehicles or there's accidents or there's a lot of cost built into that. And we know that we can reduce that number. We also know that it's the cost per day to house someone, whether it's in our jail, the regional or county level, and we know that we can reduce those numbers. So the first few gates that we'll try to clear, it's going to be based on those things. But we also know as this progresses and we get folks out of this cycle where they become repeat clients, we get them through this program, they get stabilized, it changes their trajectory, the ripple effect of those costs are ones that we really need to get our arms around. And I think that's where the big dollars and big community impact is going to be. If you think about a situation, let's say the same that we described earlier with me as the example, and let's say I also have a family involved, mm-hmm. I have children, and maybe this situation creates a situation where I lose custody of my children, they end up in the foster care system, and the financial costs and the emotional costs and all of the challenges that creates generationally sometimes for these families, we have the chance to curb that too. And so there's a lot of opportunity for us to prove the worth, if you will, the value of what we're doing from a dollars and cents standpoint. But we're most excited about some of the clinical outcomes we're going to be able to measure and show improvement with these individuals.
Fantastic.
One of the greatest parts about the work that Life Skills gets to do, and Jim, you and I both had different experiences along these lines at different times about different things. When we were in the legislature and we passed something that was good, something that was genuinely good public policy that helped a constituent we knew, that helped a group of people in a certain situation that we knew, and then you meet somebody that got the benefit of that change.
Yeah.
This crisis center, this anchor project, is going to have stories to tell. There are going to be success stories of people whose lives were radically changed, who can testify to that trajectory changing for the better. And that's going to be a better testimony than any numbers we can throw at them. We're going to have all those numbers, and we're going to have that data, because they're going to be – Jason Petrie is going to want to know it, and he's going to – the state budget chair is going to want to know that our numbers add up right, and we crossed every T and dotted every I.
Right.
And we'll have that. But there's going to be a lot of stories to tell about the people whose lives this group of people is going to have a chance to change.
And that's what it's all about.
It is, sir.
You know, having a positive impact. And there's nothing better as a policymaker, whether you're on a city commission, fiscal court, or state legislature, impact and having an impact on positive policy.
That's right.
That makes a difference in people's lives, not just, you know, another law to burden someone. This is good policy.
That's right.
As our friend Mike Buchanan would say, this is just good government.
We sure hope so.
You've kind of talked about community engagement and collaboration are kind of central to this project's success. Dive a little deeper into some of the specific steps you're taking to involve residents, businesses, organizations in supporting the Anchor Project. And how can individuals contribute to its mission of creating a healthier, more resilient Brad region?
Well, that's an excellent question, Jim. So the history, or at least where we got to today, part of our planning with this that our funders with the General Assembly required us to do was to have some community forums to talk about this topic in general. And so we had four of those last year, end of last year, one in Hart County, one in Barron County, and then they were bookended by two meetings in Warren County, and invited the community at large, publicized it on social media, invited some local elected leaders and different healthcare partners to come. And we just talked about this concept in general and solicited feedback. There was some online forums where you could fill out a survey or send in your comments that was specific to this project. But we also bring in lots of other healthcare and social services planning that our community does a great job of doing already. Our friends at the Barron River District Health Department do an annual needs assessment for our community around healthcare. And so we took that data that the community has shared with us to build into this. There's also other opportunities to provide feedback. At the state level, we have there's a judicial commission on mental health right now that's being chaired by Chief Justice Deborah Lambert, and she's doing a listening tour, basically visiting different regions across Kentucky, talking about the intersection of mental health, the justice system, and how we can do that better. We've had a chance to get feedback from that group as they've done their work statewide and share with them our ideas here and be able to incorporate that into the work we're doing too. So that's how we've got to the point today. Going forward, the biggest thing we'll have to do really is help educate the community once this is up and running, how to use the service, how to access
right.
it. And that's what we've heard from our peers across the country who've tried similar initiatives. The biggest struggle early on is folks understanding how it works. You know, in that situation we described earlier, you may think, well, when I see this, I just need to call 911. And that's not a bad response. That's going to get help. But we have to change some behavior of what folks are used to. They know, hey, look, you don't have to do that anymore. You can walk in, can schedule an appointment, can bring them in as a crisis comes about. We can come to them with mobile services, and it's available 24/7. So we're going to call on the community over the next year to help us spread the message about what this is, how it'll work. And so you can keep an eye out for some of that information coming soon.
All right.
Yeah, we're actually we don't have a date to mm-hmm. announce yet, but the groundbreaking is coming up soon, and mm-hmm. we'll have as much of the community as we can fit on campus to come out and celebrate that big milestone. So this is an exciting time for our region, and for the good that we get a chance to do.
Yeah, and I think I know I'm going to leave someone out here, but I know Representative Jackson, Kevin Jackson, and Mayor Alcott and Commissioner Perigin, and of course the rest of our state delegation here, our local delegation, they all had their DNA on this a little bit, and I know, sir. it was hard fought as well, because you were there, Whitney, so you know sometimes these things getting appropriations for projects like this that
and 20 million is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and sometimes it's all the way to the end of April 14th or 15th before some of this stuff gets done. And
indeed.
I think this project kind of got in there at the last minute. It was talked about quite a bit, but you know, trying to get it finalized was a huge win for this region.
It was a huge win, and I think the entire delegation from the Life Skills Service area, all 18 counties, I think mm-hmm. it was 100% voting aye.
Yeah.
At the state legislative level, it's been nothing but support from the local level. Been nothing but support from all those groups Jodan's talked about, because everybody recognizes this is the problem.
Oh yeah.
Everybody recognizes the need, and everyone appreciates the intuitive nature of putting these services together in one place.
Yeah.
It requires the will to do it, not just the will of the legislature to you know, marshal those resources and distribute them and appropriate them, but for Life Skills and the rest of our partners to stand this thing up, staff it, and run it 24/7. And it's exciting to be a part of it.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, before I let you go, I'd be derelict in my duty if I didn't ask, talk about some of the other things that Life Skills does, you know, because you all have a lot of great programs, and of course this podcast is typically about business and economic development, and I think you all have a major role you play in our community and getting people training to get them back in the workforce and becoming productive citizens regardless of you know, any types of issues they may have. So talk a little bit about that.
Be happy to. It's community mental health is who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is, I don't think, as known as it, I wish it was, in Kentucky, when this came about nationally in the 60s from the Kennedy administration, Kentucky was the first state in the union to have community mental health available in every county. And there's a great story with lots of neat history for another time about how that came out and played out. But at the time, in the mid-60s, we were at the cutting edge of the nation in this. The challenge has been, we haven't stayed there, and that's no one individual's fault, but it's been a challenging development, you know, over most of my adult life. But we have more momentum with us today than we've ever had,
right.
At not just locally, but I think across the country. And some of the crisis and challenges that we've experienced as a local community and as a nation, I think have helped shown that mental health is just as important as your physical health and other things too.
Right.
And it's important to treat it and take care of it the same way. But the work is designed to help keep people healthy and safe and strong in their communities. That's the core of who we are. And by default, that's going to help us make folks good citizens in their community, you know, productive members of society, keep them in the workforce, and build healthy and stronger families. So we have a series of programs, almost 60 different services that we offer across right now 18 counties and I think 36 different physical locations across those 18 counties. We've got almost 800 employees that do wonderful work every day. I'm amazed every day at some of the stories I hear of the challenges that they help people work through, and then would be enough to sink me, and they come back the next day ready to go and do it again. And so they're really, really amazing people that do amazing work, and their line of sight impact. I think that's the thing. It's someone walks in a terrible situation, you see how you can help them immediately. And I think that's a powerful motivator for the folks that do the work that we do. But the work is mostly community-based. We don't have, our focus isn't really on inpatient services. That's a key component of this care delivery system. But we partner with lots of great folks that do that. But we provide traditional outpatient services for mental health, addiction treatment services, but we also support individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And the concepts are the same. We try to keep those folks as healthy and strong in their communities as they can, to try to avoid historically the been very few options for those individuals and their families.
Right.
Maybe it was an institution.
Yeah, short of institutionalization,
right.
Not a lot.
So there's some amazing stories there too of folks that have really been through challenges I don't think I could have withstood in my life, and are still going strong, and how they've been able to not just stabilize their situation, but really develop a place where they're part of their community and thriving. So across the board, really, it's about, again, just helping folks grow and be productive members of society and be healthy in their communities.
That's awesome. Whitney, anything to add?
No, I don't. I think that answer was right on the nose. There are some things on the horizon for life skills and that we're pursuing to broaden our scope of services that we offer. And that's going to do nothing but increase our ability, not just to create jobs of ourselves, for our organization and for this area, but to provide better services and a better continuum of care beyond just the crisis center with the Anchor Project. So the next 6 months really will be pretty exciting times for life skills as we're working with the state and other partners to do some additional growth and change and add, not change, but add to our array of services that we offer, and it'll be all to the good.
That's fantastic. Any final words, Shodan?
Just appreciate the opportunity, and I'd be missed if I didn't take a chance to thank both of you all. In my adult life, I think we've been really fortunate this part of the state to have a wonderful history of representatives in Frankfort, and both of you guys are in that category. We've been really, really fortunate to have great senators, great representatives at city and county level too, and so I just appreciate the service that you all provided and the time out of your all's professional career that you donated to do that work. So you did a great job.
Likewise, and we appreciate all the work that you and the whole team at Life Skills do as well. Whitney, any final comments?
No, I'm glad to be a part of this team. When you have the job that we had, Jim, in the legislature, you see so many parts of the Commonwealth. So many people work hard to do their part in whatever sector, in whatever industry and trade. I've got some family history with the behavioral health provider in Hopkinsville, the Pinnerol Center, which merged with Life Skills 5 years ago. My father used to be the executive director for a time before he retired. And so I've been around a behavioral health provider all my life in one way or another. And so to join them and to be a part of this team doing this work that every family in Kentucky can benefit from, it's a special change for my career once I left the legislature. I appreciate the kind words, Jodan, but I believe the impact I'm going to get a chance to have with the team at Life Skills is going to be greater than I ever had in Frankfort.
Amen. Jodan Beavers, Whitney Westerfield, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to Jodan Beavers and Whitney Westerfield from Life Skills Industries for joining us this week on the DeCesare Group podcast, and thank you for checking us out as well. Hey, if you like what you hear, please share it with a friend, and don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, leave us a review, and share your feedback with us. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. You can even subscribe to our weekly newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News, by going to our website, thedecesaregroup.com. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a public relations and consulting firm based in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Our engineer and production guru is Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly. The DeCesare Group podcast is researched by Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, inviting you to join us again next time for the DeCesare Group podcast.